Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West, West, West.
The trade paperback spectacular.
Ah.
I am one of your hosts, Nat, and with me, as always...
Cat in a hat.
And Pat with no hat.
And today we have a special guest. We have Griffin Games and Comics trade paperback graphic novel expert...
Spectacular.
Kim!
Hi!
So this is actually one of our mini-sodes. We're going to go ahead and do... kind of our top three each trade paperbacks of all time. I want to do a little bit of like...
There might be manga in there. There might be. Well, I don't know who would do that.
I want to talk about a little bit of a preface of this. In trade paperback, we literally mean anything that could have been published solely as a graphic novel, a collection of individual comic books, or a collection of manga or a specific manga volume. So we are looking at the broad spectrum. And yeah, so...
So our favorite thick comic books of all time.
Pretty much. Who wants to get started? We didn't really think about that.
I mean, I could go first since I only have technically one actual comic on here.
All right, well, let's hear it.
Which is the funniest part because it's not even a DC one.
What? Is it Disney?
It's not Disney either. It's Image.
What? All right. Let's hear it.
I don't understand where she's going with this.
The Walking Dead. The first giant... I always say this wrong, and Nat normally has to pronounce it for me. So the first compendium, because...
Compendium.
Thank you.
So you have...
Every time, and I know it, I say it right in my head, and then it doesn't come out that way. But anyways...
Doctors on the other side.
Anyways, the first one, because one, more bang for your buck. I'm just saying, like... There's 48 issues in here. The first 48 issues of The Walking Dead.
It's like 6 volumes.
That's a lot.
If I remember correctly, it said 8. Yeah. So either way...
So why specifically do you like the first 48 issues of The Walking Dead, Kat?
Specifically because, number one, the show sucks in comparison. It sucks. Everybody can get mad and angry at me all you want, but until you read the comic... Shut up.
We are throwing shade today.
Oh my gosh.
We all know I'm not nice. I don't hide it. But the first 40 issues is... It's a lot darker. You see more... Yes, the world is over. Woo! I like the fact that there's a lot more psychological elements to it, and you actually see that it's actually harming children, too, growing up in this world. And you see that within this first... book.
Oh my god, you see it a lot in
the first book. I think, if I remember correctly too, like, there's like a giant, I mean, people die. Like, nobody is safe. No one, nothing is safe, and I don't want to tell anybody anything, because I would actually like you to read it, but no one is safe. Everybody is like, you're on the chopping block. It doesn't matter. In the show, I feel like there are some people who are not, they can't kill. In this one, there's days where I'm like, I don't know if you're gonna live. But
one of the things that I noticed just like flipping through it and having read, I mean, I don't probably only read like the first three volumes of Walking Dead way back in the day. And it's the artistic change. When you're going from Tony Moore to Charlie Adler, you actually get to see it in this compendium, which is really interesting to me because, you know, you have, and it's funny that Kirkman has this sort of history, is starting a book with one artistic creator who helped shape what the book is, but then the book completely becomes the other artist. Like, it is... I mean, Charlie Adler is so associated with Walking Dead that I'm not even sure what else he's done. Like, his art is so, like, ingrained in what the visual imagery of Walking Dead is.
It makes me so happy. It took me days to read this. And
days?
Jesus
Christ.
It's huge.
Why is that fast?
That's fast. For me, I'm like, I am a slow reader.
Mm-hmm. I read really quickly, and it took me days to read this, and I finished it, and I was like, I need the second one! And now this is the only way I read them, because...
Because it's painful. It's kind of painful to sometimes to try and keep up with it issue by issue.
Well, yeah. I mean, the other part of it is like, look at this. There's three of these. There's going to be a fourth, I believe, soon, because I think they're hitting that mark right about now since the last one. But, like, I mean...
You just broke some eardrums with the feedback right there.
Sorry.
That was it. Like,
my headphones.
You can't see me wave. I feel bad.
I'm really concerned about the Witchblade issue #1 that just got demolished by that compendium.
Oh no, I thought it was there! there too.
That's right, you still have the variant cover.
It's true, I still have two. It's all right, but I'm still sad about it. Awesome. But I mean, it's also a convenient paperweight, and you know, self defense.
Yeah, right. Be able to beat somebody with your comic books.
Which is kind awesome. Of aqueduct.
You can throw it at the zombies and they'll eat
it. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, they can get their brains from this. There's some good vocabulary in there. I don't know.
That's awesome.
Low jokes today, I'm sorry.
Low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll go ahead and jump in next, and I will talk about my number three, which, because, you know, obligatory Batman book, why not? Batman Dark Victory. Written by Jeff Loeb, art by Tim Sale.
I would just like to point out how nicely yellowed the page is.
this is
that's
beat up.
Vintage, man.
Clearly an old comic.
This is DC Comics logo from two logos ago. So yeah, this is an older copy of this book. Artistic influence is always going to be a driving force for me, and I had never.
Was that Catwoman was awesome looking.
She's totally, well, Tim Sale's design sense, and I had a discussion with Patrick about this as we talked about our comic book, is that it's almost Batman from the lens of a 10-year-old child looking up. So all
looking,
of the characters are
this panel,
super heightened. The story is a sequel. A lot of people prefer Long Halloween. I like Dark Victory because it is the villain parade. You really get to see Two-Face. You get to see Joker. And there's a lot of turns. And one of the things I think this book does incredibly well is Robin. You get the introduction of
Which
Dick
Robin?
Grayson.
Okay, thank you.
This is like, it's basically Batman Year 3, I guess, would be like the best time frame to put it in. It's very classic. It is very dark. And it deals with...
Dark Victory, dark.
Right, exactly. It deals with the Hangman Killer, who... everybody's kind of assuming that it's just going to be a rehash of Holiday, who was the killer in The Long Halloween, but there's some family elements. It introduces elements into the origin of Catwoman.
Huh.
It's just, it's been the inspiration, or it's part of the inspiration for the Batman Begins Dark Knight universe that was, you know, created by Chris Nolan. There's so much of just Batman when you read this. It just feels so pure. It has that 1920s, 1940s, vibe. It's just awesome, and it's one of those things that's easy to read. It's violent. It's just everything I love about Batman.
I'd like to point out, you said violence. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I mean, look at like super
Batman
cool.
Is violent.
What?
Dick Grayson as the little kid in his proto suit, just kicking some ass.
Is that a bat?
I think it's just a stick that's like a staff. Probably something that he was training with.
Mm.
So, yeah, if you haven't read the Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale partnership, and you're a Batman fan, you're doing yourself a disservice. This is really one of the great...
You have to get accustomed to that artwork.
I don't know. I always have to
get myself in the right mindset.
See, and for me, it's just automatically appealing. I think it's different. It doesn't look like what you see on... comic book shelves normally. There's no real, like, Tim Sale is Tim Sale. You'll see Tim Sale's art and know that, and I think for me that is what I look for.
Like it's a little gritty. I can't say that I like Dick Grayson's.
Well, he's a kid. I mean, he's legitimately a child in this. This is his, you see the death of his parents. You see Dick Grayson's origin as part of this story.
Interesting.
I think you're up.
I guess that's the order we're going in.
Mine are not in any particular order because I didn't do that. So we're going to start with this one. Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud.
So good.
I've actually read a little bit of that too.
So good. This man has not, because he is the worst comics manager ever.
What?
See, we are throwing shade.
See, that's the kind of shade that's not necessary.
So this book changed how I read other books.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, like not just how I read comics, but how you read virtually anything, how you read advertising, how you read just like the language of images, which I had never really thought about. And it's possible.
How you look at a piece of art.
Yeah. How you kind of look at things. This changed how I do that. It's possible that you have not read this and you don't like it because you have this visual training already.
Right.
That would still be stupid.
I was like, you know what? We almost came out of that hole.
So my major problem with this is I don't like Scott McCloud's art, and as we've established before, I am an art guy. It's not appealing to me. It's newspaper comic strip, which has its own place. I'm not saying that that's not warranted, just not my taste. The other thing is, I went into this book not really knowing its importance. And I see the name Understanding Comics and went, oh, okay, so this is going to be something that I can refresh, you know, panel layout, and this will be something that's great for new people. If you don't know how to read comics, this is impossible to read. You have to have that basis first. So I felt like it was false advertising. Like, I'm looking at Understanding Comics going, right, wait a minute.
It's comics theory.
This is a textbook written in panel layout. Yeah.
Yes.
And knowing that now, I will give it a second chance.
Whatever, you're never getting my copy ever again because you did not properly respect it.
Wow.
Dang.
Wow.
So, Kim, what are some of your favorite parts of Understanding Comics? If you had a particular favorite chapter, per se, or something like that?
I go back and I read, like, chapters. So chapter 2, right, the vocabulary, is a really important one. It's also huge. But, I mean, even I will see this sitting on my shelf, and I will just randomly open up to, like, a random page and just read a few pages and go, oh, yeah, that's right. Brilliant!
So is this not meant to be read linear, or, like, is it...
No, I think that the reason that I can do that with it is because I've read it many times.
Okay.
Right? So because I can just sort of drop myself back in there.
Each chapter of this basically takes a different stance, like... One is the history, two is the vocabulary, there's a chapter about colors, there's a chapter about, like, time.
There's a chapter about colors in a black and white book.
Yeah. Well, that's the only chapter that's in color.
What? Show me this.
There's a chapter about the gutter. There's a whole chapter just about the gutter.
It might not be in color in mine, actually.
Oh, in mine it's actually in color, but that might be a different printing.
Yeah, this is really old.
So yeah, it's great. If you
there it is. No,
oh,
it
there
is.
You go. Oh, sweet.
It is
color
You're
theory.
Right. Look, there's Mobius.
See, I would actually like to read this chapter because color theory in school was rough.
Yeah,
it was a rough chapter for
artistic training.
In the back of my mind, I'm like, and this is why Kat's going to be a logistics analyst because she can only understand that. They're like creative theory. Here you go.
Yeah.
A word about color.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yep.
I was hoping the word was going to be in color, but, you know, whatever.
Too cheeky, maybe. Like that. It's too on the nose, as they say.
Still. Anyway, so good. Everyone should read it.
So I was about to say, who do we recommend the Understanding Comics?
It is not for people who are just getting into comics.
No.
It is for people who have been... introduced to the genre already and know about it and want to understand.
In addition to that, right, there's a certain type of nerd which is going to be more interested in this. And it's like, right, it's a theoretical nerd, right? It's a person who, right.
Basically, if you are
my literary theory class was one of my favorite classes.
Mm-hmm.
So like, if it's one of those things, I mean, I guess. Because we sit and analyze comics all the time, so I feel like for all of us, it'll probably be an easier thing to do, but I think if it's more, I'm guessing, what I'm assuming is, I haven't read it, so I don't know, I have to read it, I don't have time for anything. Anyways, if you like to analyze and overthink things, I'm guessing this would probably be right up someone's alley.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This should not be the...
Proved that is not necessarily the case.
This should not
be... But you have a different reason.
True.
Right. You've looked at it and you said, I don't like this particular thing about it, and I have to get past that thing in order to.
True.
And you're also
this should not be the first trade paperback that you read.
No.
This should not be the first trade paperback that you read.
Read The Walking Dead!
It should be the fourth.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah. Can I take my recommendation back? I just thought about that. Don't do that. Read something happy first.
Don't read The Walking Dead first.
Maybe we should read Patrick's pick first, right?
Yes.
Well, should I start with my first ever graphic novel since we just mentioned that?
Sure.
Even though it's not my third favorite, it's my second favorite of all time. We'll do it a little bit out of order. This is Watchmen by Alan Moore with art by Dave Gibbons. This is the first ever graphic novel that I ever read. I was in high school, and it was a summer reading option, actually.
He's got the yellow pages going on 112.
Yes, I have the yellow pages.
I honestly did break out my Watchmen copy and, like,
I've owned this for probably close to 10 years at this point. This book is amazing. Once again, unless you're really like me and you just love, like, reading things that make you, like, hate your life and the world around you, then this should not also, this should also not be the first comic book that you read.
What is wrong with all of us?
Mine was new reader friendly.
So, if you are not familiar with...
Bitch Planet, though. Like, he, dude's always been dense.
Yeah.
If you, that sounded bad. So, if you... I will let myself out.
So, if you are not familiar with the storyline of Watchmen, it takes place during the Cold War. There is a group of superheroes called the Watchmen who are...
The Minutemen.
Oh, the Minutemen, yes, because the Watchmen was the previous group.
No, there's no, so here's a funny thing. There's no one ever called the Watchmen.
That's true.
The Watchmen is a term used for the government, for superheroes.
It's just the graffiti that you see on the wall.
For anyone in power, it's who watches the Watchmen.
That's true. I forget this. So there's a group of superheroes called, the Minutemen, who are based, they go around fight crime in capes and whatnot. And none of them have superpowers except for Dr. Manhattan.
Who comes on the scene later.
Yes, who comes on the scene much later. And he is God. His superpower is to control things at an anatomical level, or...
At atomical level.
Excuse me.
Anatomically correct atomic level.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Pull things apart that look the way they're supposed to be.
So he is...
My eyes are bleeding.
So he is the only thing that is basically keeping Russia from attacking the United States during the Cold War, because if Russia attacks the United States, he'll just remove Russia from existence and there will just be a white space on the map.
Yep.
And
what was that? Let's not talk about it.
Yeah. So, for the fact that at one point he just leaves, and so the world kind of goes to shit. This book is so dense as well. Like, there's just so much going on.
I have to reread it.
And after each chapter, we get, like, fake, like, letters and newspaper clippings and textbooks that just give you more about the world that it's in, not even the plot. We have, like, the question of what is justice and is it right to kill 3 million people to save 3 billion people? Or is it, like, just, like...
Save the many and save the few.
This is basically the psychology of superheroes in this whole thing. It takes your favorite superheroes, or at the time I read this, I had such a vague understanding of superheroes. It takes the idea of people who go out and just punch the shit out of other people with their bare fists and asks the question why. Yes. Why do they punch the shit out of
what?
People?
You know what? Because honestly, the fact that he read...
Because something is wrong.
Yeah.
The fact that he read this verse probably explains... all of your comics,
as he was talking about that, I was thinking about the fact that, like, this probably had that seminal formation of the superhero to Patrick, so there's, like, this distaste for that type of hero that has sort of naturally developed from that.
I never thought about that, because I've never liked the bubblegum sort of superheroes that just go out and punch people for America.
It's like, me and Matt sit over here, me and my Superman, and his Batman.
I want the comedian. I want Rorschach. I want all of the heroes to be Silk Spectre. I want Superman to be Dr. Manhattan.
Which also, like, is why you actually have positively gravitated towards White Knight. Is like, it's about the broken idea.
Yeah, exactly. It's not this. Yeah, it just asks, and not only does it ask the question of how do superheroes think, but it also asks the question of how do people think in general. And it doesn't just ask the question of why do superheroes exist, it asks the question of why do we exist. And
God, it's Blade Runner all over again.
I know. This is basically like the superhero version of Blade Runner.
Oh, God.
Oh, my gosh. I could go on forever. Watchmen, amazing.
This is an interesting, like, this Watchmen might be unique, and I think that might be the only book here that all of us have read.
It's been a long time, so
we'll
it's
see.
Like pulling.
We should reconvene at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
it's been a long time, though. Like, we're taught. How old am I?
I don't know.
It's been a bit, so it's like I have to. And it's one of those things of I just read it. I can't say that I necessarily absorbed what I read either. It was one of those of.
You can also, I mean, that one is tricky because you can read it at several different levels.
Yeah.
You can go through and you can just read the comics and not read any of the text in the back, and you're fine. You
that's
understand
what I did.
What happened.
That's what I did the first time I read it through. And then
the next time you go through and you're like, oh my god, look at all this other stuff!
Yeah, that's
and honestly,
thing,
all
like,
it really does is make me want to go back too when I think about it and look through the Cold War, because that's one of the, that's one of the ones where I feel like if you know the history better, if it makes me feel like Animal Farm. If you know the history better, you see more and understand more. So that's like the other part of it is I'm like, I feel like now I need, like once I read, I'm like, I don't remember.
Well, and it's a funny thing for me with Watchmen is, once again, going back to being an art guy, Dave Gibbons has a perfect panel layout and like characterization. Everybody looks different. It's not appealing to me. It is a book that I've read because of what it is for comic books, less about something that
I've
personally enjoyed.
Artistically, it has not aged well.
No, it hasn't. It's a product of the 80s, and it feels
is.
Like a product of the 80s.
Heard the author is very interesting in himself.
Alan Moore.
What do you mean by interesting is freaking crazy, right?
That's essentially what I meant.
Alan Moore, while being an amazing writer, is probably the most egotistical person writing comics ever.
Well,
I've heard someone told me that the god he worships is like a snake god from like the 7th century.
That would
not surprise me.
He's like a warlock now. Like, he writes comics and practices, you know, magic. So.
Yeah.
And not like the cards, because I do that.
But apparently whatever he's doing is working, because this book is on the New York Times 100 best books of all time.
But to be fair, it's been there for like years.
Yeah, it's
right?
Still,
this came out forever ago.
It's still
nice. I am not as into his more recent stuff. I don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, it might be because as time has gone on, he got more money and things are a little out.
Well, and
sorry if you're listening, Alan Moore, but he's kind of disappearing up his own asshole.
Yeah. I mean, no one is going to say, Alan Moore, you're a terrible writer.
No.
Well, people are just going to be like,
Alan Moore,
weird.
He's past his prime.
He's past his prime.
Done his thing.
But there's a lot of creators,
But the stuff that he did.
Yeah.
Fucking amazing!
It's seminal.
I don't
know
what our rating is. Sorry.
Oh, it just fits out fine.
It's whatever.
We can. I'm here!
Yeah.
I know, but I have been listening to you. I'm just kidding.
Ah!
Oh,
Kim's
so like, much shade.
Man, like, what the heck?
You don't need to come back!
It's like,
I've been voted out.
It's like, the invitation was a one-time only event.
Please tell our viewers, is Shade your middle name?
It's not.
She's like, I thought about renaming it, though. It's fine. Don't
right,
worry about
so,
it.
Well, we can talk about
right,
Watchmen a
we
lot.
We should start
so,
again.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what
oh,
else
is it my turn?
Yeah, it's your turn again.
I'm going to do the most surprising thing ever and talk about a manga. Like, I know. Like, out of
what's
the park.
What's a manga? No, just kidding.
Well, let me inform you of...
I keep thinking my coffee's over here. I don't know why.
So... The next one that I'm going to do, it's called Another. I don't know if anybody's ever seen the series or read. It's actually started out as a book, funny enough.
A novel or like?
A novel. It was a novel.
Okay.
Well, that's usually the creative process in Japan. It is a light novel, and then it's adapted into a manga, and then it's adapted into an anime.
Yeah,
and then you get a U.S. live action movie.
He hit all key points. He's right. But no, I've read the novel. I read the novel first, and then I read the manga, and the manga is better. And it's also probably because it's easier to follow. It's one of the ones I had to do a spreadsheet for because I kept getting confused.
Okay.
Mostly because I couldn't follow what character was what, and I couldn't remember who was female and what was male, or who was male. Like, I had to do blue and pink. It was pretty... Someone's going to have to pronounce names for me. All
right. So it's written by Yukito Aya. Ayatsui?
Yeah, I think it's a J.
And then Hiro Kiyohara would be the artist.
Thank you.
I hope I did that okay. Like,
you did it better than I would have. That's all that really matters. matters, because I would have been... Yeah, we would have been here a while. But the manga, just because the visuals help me, and this might just be because I'm American, so of course, like, Japanese names don't make sense to me, because I had it pointed out to me why I didn't understand it. Most female names end in a vowel, whereas male names end in a consonants, which I never knew or realized. Whereas in Japan,
all names
everything
end
is
with
like
a vowel,
yeah, everything ends
unless
in a
it ends
vowel.
With an N.
I got really confused there, and I thought we were talking about Japanese.
No,
and I was like going, I'm like, that doesn't seem right.
I literally just disproved that.
Yeah, right. Sorry, I was like,
no, it's yeah. So that was the one thing that I had a hard time with, is I couldn't keep track of who was female and who was male, and then having to keep track. There's a lot of characters.
Gotcha.
So it's trying to keep track of all of that is also it was very hard for me.
So aside from it being a confusing read, why is
it
your favorite?
What
manga
is it anyway?
So it takes place in 1998. You meet Koichi, which I can never remember if I say his name right.
Right.
Yeah. So he ends up going to a new school in another town. He has a condition, I can't remember what it's called, but where his lung will collapse if he gets too nervous and there's too much and his lung collapses. So when you first meet him, he's actually in the hospital. So he's going to a new middle school in his mom's old town. His mother had passed away. So he's in the hospital and he meets his class reps and he doesn't really understand what's going on with them. They're acting slightly strange and he's like, okay, I guess. Hi. It's basically that entire interaction. It's completely awkward and you don't understand. So he starts going to school. He ends up going to school a week late because of what happened to him. So when he goes into class, he sees another student, anyways, but it seems like no one else can see her.
Hmm.
Like, she doesn't exist. So now you have this weird thing where he's like, am I crazy? But then you have students who are like, you shouldn't pay attention to things that aren't there.
Hmm.
And the class that he's in has this weird quirk to it, and all of a sudden, one of his classmates dies after he's been paying attention to this girl. Her name is May, and she has an eye patch. It's weird. Anyways, it's not weird, but it's all very creepy, but not scary, and it's violent, but not gory.
Like, so what is the reason that
there's a quirk
that
she's
there? If you could
spoiler,
or maybe not like the reason, but what is like the message of
the
why
message
she's
is
there?
The message is don't pay attention to things that aren't there. Basically, follow the group, and when you stop following the group, there might be problems. And with a sudden, and then with a sudden classmate's death, that's when things start to take a turn for the worse, because that's when they realize you did this wrong, and now we're all in trouble.
Huh.
So, warning after warning, he ignores them, and it only leads into more questions because he doesn't understand what is going on. He's like, I don't get this. What's happening? What do you mean? Why? And then eventually it comes down to a point where he can't get any of his questions answered.
Hmm.
It's really good. It's not like, it's one of those creepy ones where you're like, holy crap.
Yeah, it feels like the suspense is just in the story itself.
The entire story is built on suspense, and the thing was, is coming down, so I read the book, and then I picked up the manga. Reading the book, like, the book was really good, but going into the manga, I felt like it was just a more, there were certain characters that were not brought in until later in the story, which didn't make sense, because they ended up being this huge part to it. And then they weren't brought up until the end. So having that expanded some of the characters a little bit more. And so, and of course, the visual helped me understand who was who and keep everything straight, because I got thought bubbles next to people. So that was also helpful in that effect. I'm not saying don't read the book, but the manga is much better because it's got a little more to it and the characters get a little more developed. And when you have a character who ends up being relatively important and they don't show up till like this much left of the book, then,
yeah,
then like they show up, but they're not really anybody until then.
So I want to know why this is in your top three.
Because
you told us a lot about the story,
yeah,
which implies that it's a good story.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, that's great. But why does it mean something to you?
Top three wise is because I catch plot lines all the damn time. Every single time. It's very rare that I don't catch what they're gonna do. Even when some people are like, can you believe they did that? I'm like, I saw that from like 2 hours ago. Where were you at? This one actually caught me off guard. I was like, what? Like, it's one of the books that's, it's very hard to catch me off guard with these kind of things. And that one did. I was like, when I hit the end of the book and you hit the big climax, I was like, what? Like, I usually catch things relatively early. Like, I can't even tell you the countless movies where I'm like, saw that happening, knew that. I still enjoy movies, but when they actually catch me off guard, I'm like, oh, all right! So that's why I ended up in the top three, because of that thing exactly. Because I was caught off guard, I didn't know what to do with it, but I'm like,
Stop! It's something that just stuck with you.
Yeah.
So. The right amount of suspense.
Yeah, I have a bookcase full of manga, and it's sitting on the top shelf in the front. Like, it's also two books deep. So then that one's sitting in the very front. And it's like the entire story too, because the one thing that does...
Is it a single volume or is it multiple volumes?
Yes, it is one volume. At least the way I bought it, it was in one volume. I don't actually know how it originally came out. I'm assuming it's chapters like everything else, but it... When I bought it, it's in that single volume, and it's harder for, like, it will come up, like, my top one is the one that kind of gets unfortunate because it's split into two. So I had to pick between the two, even though I like the entire story. Mm. It's this, yeah. So that's the kind of the crappy part to that with manga a lot of times is you get split. So this one, having it in a complete volume, is really nice. And it's not a super long, you don't need a lot of history kind of deal. And that's the other thing, is it's a nice read that I don't have to, like, you delve into it, but I don't have to, like, sit and think about it either. Huh. It makes you think, but you're not, like, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
Nat's prepping.
Nat's
my book is head
already.
Okay. Oh, look, it's not The Walking Dead, though. Don't worry, guys. He won't drop it.
I have All-Star Superman as my number two.
That's right, guys. He picked the Superman one, not me.
I picked the Superman one, and mind you, it's above a Batman story. So this is my absolute edition. So it's this beautiful oversized slipcase version.
I actually kind of want to buy that.
One of my favorite images of in comics ever.
We'll get to things later
for another issue, right?
I'll be salty.
So this is written by Grant Morrison and art by Frank Quitely. And quite frankly, Frank Quitely might be the best pencil or inker in comics.
I
love Frank
Quitely.
Never mind.
Uh-oh.
Never mind.
All right.
You've passed your shade level.
I'm actually, he's one of my absolute favorite.
I can't sassily hair flip, so I feel like we missed out on that sometimes.
But so this is the story of Superman on his deathbed. It's in the first issue. He is basically manipulated by Luther into going into the sun, and what that does is it over-radiates his cells.
What? He's manipulated by Luther?
I know, right?
Who the fuck?
The good-natured superhero manipulated? Oh, my God.
As a
Superman fan, I never saw it coming.
Y'all need to shut up. I gotta talk here. Jesus Christ.
She started it.
So the premise is that his cells start to explode. So this is Superman with more power than he's ever had, and he's dying. So
his power is killing him.
Yes, his power is killing him. So it is a retelling of the 12 labors of Hercules in Superman's world. So he goes through and he has to solve a riddle. He creates life. He figures out how to give superpowers to other people. It's this masterpiece journey of Superman. He gets to re-witness his father's death, but he gets to spend time with him as Superman without his father realizing it. It deals with identity.
It's quite pretty in Begin.
It is. It's beautiful. Frank Quitely's art is ugly. I'm going to say that. Like, there's something about, like, I put Quitely
and... I have to ask, how does his dad die in this one? Because I've seen different renditions.
Had a heart attack.
Okay, it is a heart attack. All right.
He has a heart attack, and Superman's life, part of his time is eaten by the Chronobore, so he loses the minutes that he would need to save him.
Yeah.
So He tries, but he can't. He doesn't make it there. This is just like, it's 12 issues combined into this just beautiful piece of art. It's Silver Age in the like weird sci-fi elements. It doesn't shy away from kind of the ridiculousness of Superman and how at his best he's a science fiction character. I think that's really what is missed a lot of the times. Do sci-fi stories, have weird aliens, have him be a scientist. He's a scientist's son. It's part of his lineage to
be. Well, he's also, what I don't think everybody realizes either, he's actually incessantly intelligent. Like, exactly. That's why him and Batman get along so well, because Superman, intelligence-wise, is the one who can challenge him.
So you mentioned Silver Age. Do you know off the top of your head when this was published?
Well, this was, like, 2001.
Okay.
No, it's more recent than that. It's probably 2010.
It's okay. I was just curious, sort of like the general age.
I think it's the early aughts. I don't think it's actually 2000 now that I say that. The original published dates were 2006, 2008.
2006, 2008. Okay, cool.
Superman has new powers in this. He has a moment where he gives Lois Lane his powers, and that's his birthday present to her, is to be able to experience what it's like to be him for a day. And he truly loves Lois in this story. There's also something that's a really interesting visual element that I love, is that Frank Quitely and Grant Morrison sat down and said, how the hell do we distinguish Clark Kent from Superman? So they actually developed a visual language where, because, you know, Superman's intelligence, he takes the time to change his posture and change his physicality. So Superman's not, or Clark isn't just, you know, Superman with glasses and his hair mussed up a little bit.
Keep explaining. This is for somebody that I had to make a point to.
So, and I'll bring, since this is the Absolute Edition, it has all this supplementary material, and he leans, he hunches forward, he curves his back, he pigeon-toes himself. So what they postulated was that Kent is this giant farm boy in a world that is too small for him. So he's this 6-foot-tall giant who's used to being in open space, trying to live in a metropolis. So he's bumping into people all the time. He's, you know, tripping over himself because he doesn't fit in that world.
Well, I'd like to point out, the thing is with Superman is he literally hides in plain sight the entire time, because right. who's gonna think, yeah, he looks like Superman, that's cool, but how can somebody so mousy...
Clark?
Yeah.
Superman.
Yeah.
And it's just a way of drawing
not mousy,
the character.
But, you know, mm-hmm. who's so not confident in himself, who's so drawn in and hunched over into himself. How can this be Superman? Like, who... Ooh. You're going to overlook things like that. Most people
squash
normally...
books, man.
That's pretty beat up.
You overlook that stuff all the time, and that's what no one realizes, and they're like, it's just Superman glasses. I'm like, Clark Kent is an entire character in himself.
Well, and it's Clark Kent is the character that he had to build, and so they actually do the dichotomy element with Lois, where he says, hey, I'm Superman. And Lois goes, yeah, that's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah. you're not Superman.
Exactly, that's the point.
Clark, you're cute. Like, that's kind of like the relationship they have. But he's like, no, I need to show you all these things. And she thinks it's a put-on. She thinks that Superman and Clark got together and did a little joke with her.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But really, the core element of this book is the fact that you're dealing with, how does Superman react to knowing that he's going to die?
Hmm.
And there's, basically, and I can't show a lot of this, like, once again, like, the camera not being what it is.
Yeah.
The way that they've designed Superman in this is pretty classic. He has the cape that barely goes past his knees. He's got the forehead curl with the slick back hair. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, this, when I think of Superman, and I want people to read something that says, yo, you don't like Superman? Read All-Star. Tell me now that you don't like Superman.
Hmm.
So.
Thank you.
Well, interesting.
Maybe a conversation for a later time.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Well,
all right, I'm ready to duke it out.
Trying to avoid shade here. What do you have next for us, Cam?
So, the other, I'm just kind of going down my stack because I didn't really put these in order. So, continuing our Alan Moore stuff.
Who?
This is my I've had this copy of this book since I was in high school. It's got, like, all of my little bookmarks in it from, like, old high school paper. And
God, I wish I was a better nerd when I was in high school.
Look, and it's hardback, and I loved it so much.
Oh, that old DC logo again.
Super old DC logo. Right, I loved it so much. I put it in contact paper, which you're totally not supposed to do, and I was so careful about it. I'm such a nerd.
You're a nerd? Okay, you can't be here.
Yeah, I'll show myself out.
Good job, I'm proud of you.
So who's the artist on this? Because that's, I think, something that gets overlooked. People don't talk about the artist.
This is, you know, Alan Moore in the early 80s working with his Davids.
That's true.
and getting really critically acclaimed.
So why is this one of your top three?
So I did competitive speech when I was in, like, high school and college, and, like, the text that Alan Moore writes in here, that's what I have marked in here, right, are the things like the journal entries and the songs and the poems, and this is where I think this book was instrumental for me in learning that comics can be more than superhero stories. Mm. And that comics can really have just incredibly beautiful language in them. And that they can be so much more than the sum of their parts. And, you know, the movie was all right. I'm okay with it. You know, it was fine, but I am not one of those people who goes back and, like, watches the movie every year on the 5th of November, but this is another one of those books that I will just sort of, I will pick this up on my bookshelf, and I will find one of my incredibly old, yellowing.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
And I will read it wherever it is, and it makes me happy.
For me, this is, like, such a small detail of the book, but I actually read it for the first time in 2015. Mm-hmm. And there's a one panel in it when it's flashing back to the current dictator of England's, like, campaign. And it and his campaign slogan is actually "Make Britain Great Again."
Oh my god, I'm gonna have to look at that again.
Yeah, that is in one panel, and I had to stop and go to the, like, publishing page just to make sure that it was actually published in the 80s.
Like, it wasn't some sort of an edit.
That I was like, holy shit.
It's so interesting, like, to me, and the way that you talked about this is, like, being an ambassador for comic books, which I think is something important for us as we do this discussion and, you know, have this podcast, is to tell people that there's stuff out there for you. Like, you don't have to. I'm a capes and boots guy. I love that stuff. I'm not by myself. But that's not all I read, and that's not all that's out there.
Well, no,
like, that's,
I mean,
like, and that's important to see. Like, this was in the 80s. It's not a new concept that comic books are for everybody. That there's
there. Obviously, mm-hmm. I'm a pretty big proponent of, you know, boots and capes. I mean, Superman is my favorite hero, but one of my top three is The Walking Dead.
Well, and on top of that, one of your top three is a manga, which is, you know, culturally.
Yeah.
Japan looks at comics differently than we do here.
Well, and the other thing is mm-hmm. having it when you...
Yes, which we will just mention. There's bits about that. That's how Japanese is different.
The thing is, like, just reading them, like, it made me delve more into Japanese culture, because the more I delved into their culture, the more I understood another as well. It was very helpful with that as well, just because their schooling is much different, and I was curious about that, so I looked that up. I mean, it also took place in 1998. I was, like, six.
and once you get into, like, anything you... And this is on a more broad spectrum, but once you get into anything that you really enjoy, whether that be reading comics or maybe, like, playing the guitar or something like that, it just broadens your knowledge in general, which is why I encourage everybody to not only like broaden their horizons of reading, but just broaden your own horizons in general, because
well,
you will become a better,
considering
more well-rounded person.
I never have time for anything, and doing this podcast does help me read. Like, I can honestly say, like, for me, I'm so exhausted all the time, so all I watch TV a lot, and it makes me feel like I'm basically losing IQ points at this point. But reading, like, Batman White Knight, it's changed my opinions on many things. It's opened my eyes to many things. I mean, it's really weird how sometimes they translate issues in real life into comics, and we don't realize it until you're like, oh, hey, I'm thinking about this on a deeper level. Sometimes comics are yes for pleasure, and that's one of the reasons why I read them, because that's like, that's all I really want. But things like White Knight, things like understanding comics, The Walking Dead, it just shows more personable things, so it's easy to do.
Well, we had a wonderful moment just now, but we should probably move on to Patrick. Right?
So we kind of talked about getting people into comics, so this is a little like origin story for me and an origin story for my favorite superhero, Miss Marvel. So this is actually the first like quote traditional like superhero story I ever read, and this is what got me into superhero comics only about a year and a half or 2 years ago. So like, I'm here doing all this stuff, but like, you can always get into it. There's never a late time to do it. This is also the first time I went to Griffin Games and Comics. I ordered this online. Hey-o. Like any good college student did, because this was actually for a college class, and I went immediately after that class to the Griffin Games and Comics to request all of the Ms. Marvel volumes available currently. So
well done.
Yeah, so this for me is this showed me that you could have the deep thematic statements of the books that I'd like to read traditionally in a punch the bad guy kind of superhero
story. Punch the bad guy in the face.
Because her superpower is basically to make her fist into a giant fist and punch someone.
That's great.
But the first issue of this just blew me away, honestly. It has one of my favorite quotes from all of comics in the beginning. One of the other characters, Zoe, is talking to Miss Marvel's friend Nakia about her headscarf, and she's like, oh, does your dad make you wear it? And Nakia replies, actually, my dad wants me to take it off. He thinks it's a phase. And Zoe replies, really? Wow, cultures are so interesting. And then just transitions into something completely different. I just love that.
Zoe is hilarious in there.
Cultures are so interesting. Yeah.
Cultures
oh
are
God,
so interesting.
That's so and then, amazing!
Yeah. And then there's also a line in the first issue where she's like, I have a better chance of becoming blonde than a superhero, which, funny enough, once she goes through Terrigenesis, she becomes a blonde superhero. So
we don't have more fun or
anything. So Ms. Marvel can transform her body. One of her superpowers includes shape-shifting, basically. Okay. And so she goes around initially and fights crime as classic Miss Marvel, Carol Danvers, and but it's like such a good thematic statement in this book that using this power of transformation weakens her other abilities, and so by literally not being herself, she is being a worse version of herself that she can be. And so she ends up getting shot and has to like transform back to heal herself, basically. And for like the rest of the run that it's been out for almost 3 years at this point, she doesn't use her shape-shifting powers. I think in other comics I've seen her use it, other runs, not by G. Willow Wilson, who, I love you, G. Willow Wilson. I love you so much.
I was wondering when you were going to get to the right
one. Yes, and
but
I believe,
not in a creepy way.
Yeah, not in a creepy way,
maybe
in a way that's
creepy.
Like, can we please have a 10-hour coffee date one day?
So a little creepy.
Yeah.
It's adoration. It's a little creepy.
One of my favorite things about that book is that, like, her family and her friends are they're so well characterized.
And they're just her family and friends.
Awesome.
Yeah, her dad and her mom are just like so great, and she doesn't have my parents were killed and now I fight crime.
She's just a kid.
She writes.
What? I'm just gonna start like write a headlamp out and then we can just she hit writes people with light for shade.
She
like,
writes she writes superhero fanfic. She she does actually.
That's a really interesting to a character.
Yeah, right. There's a great issue of I believe it's the Avengers annual when she was in the Avengers and it's all done through fanfic. It's actually, and it turns out in the end that also Phil Coulson is a big fanfic author.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I know, right? So, but yeah, she just has like a normal family, and they're all so great, and they all progress so well, and just the characterization is done amazingly. And I believe one of the first villains she fights is kidnapping millennials. And is basically using... So at first when I was like, oh, Muslim superhero, I was expecting like a Muslim thematic statement about like that. But this is about everything that Ms. Marvel is. And the first arc is about her being a millennial. And that G. Willow talks about this in her TED Talk, which is an amazing TED Talk, by the way. And about how like millennials are just trashed on all the time. And it's just because older generations always hate younger generations. And that doesn't make them worse or better, but what it does is make them feel like shit. And so once that happens, then you can easily come in and convince them of an evil mentality that would get them away from their society in general. And I think that's, I don't know. I love you so much, G. Willow. I have all of your novels sitting on my bookshelf right now, too. And... Ah, so
and,
good.
And just for me, who does the art?
It's, Alfona.
I just read your shirt and it upset me.
It's, Adrian Alfona, is it? And then I believe Takeshi,
Miyazawa?
Miyazawa, yes, thank you, takes over after, Adrian. So
I'm just gonna throw in, like, one other perspective on Ms. Marvel, because I have a kid, and... something that is very common in stuff that can be read by kids or like in all ages is to assume that the character has to have like this horrific, god awful backstory.
Yeah.
In order to be interesting. Right? You know, something tragic and horrible has to happen to them to make them interesting. And that's something that I also, that this is going to sound stupid, okay, my daughter is 4, she watches Doc McStuffins. And one of the things that I like about Ms. Marvel and Doc McStuffins is that, I mean, she's relatively normal, she's nice to her parents, her friends are great, and it's just not even a thing.
That's cool.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's just, she's just being her, and she's not a jerk to anyone else. Her friends, for the most part, right, like her, and they have, like, their own motivations, and they're interesting.
See, this is the thing is, like, I mean, I understand that to a point, too, but there's also... Oh, God. Superman is something I aspire to, and I also think that sometimes we need things to aspire to. Even
I aspire to be Ms. Marvel.
That's fair.
If you read Ms. Marvel, she stands for truth and justice and everything that is good and, like, the American dream and all these good things.
What?
No, I know, right? But she's basically, like, Superman in her mentality. She's, like, if Superman was, like, a teenage geek, basically... And
we'll save that for later.
It's a similar mentality.
My God, someone just walked by the window wearing your shirt.
My shirt?
Wearing, yes.
It's time travel.
It was a sweatshirt.
We were talking about Paper Girls earlier.
Really yeah, right, right. Yeah. That's what really happened. It's apparently Patrick outside.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, it definitely wasn't Patrick.
Am I here?
I'm going to say this. Unfortunately, we are running long on time, so we're going to rush a little bit through the next, the final ones, which is counterintuitive because we should spend more time.
Yeah.
But,
well, the final one, mine's not that difficult to get through, and it's a semi-easy conversation. Mm-hmm. So my favorite, and it's, I like cutesy things so much, especially in manga. I love cutesy manga. I love it. all the, I just love it. Like, I read one about Disney princesses. Anyways, so my favorite one is called Girlfriends. Like, they're two words. And it's the Complete Collection Volume 2, and this is kind of where we run into that issue with manga where it's...
Right.
It's the complete story ends up in 2. I like the second half more because it actually delves more into things. So it ends up being Volumes 3 through number 5. This was actually the first Yuri manga that I've ever read, and if you don't know what Yuri is, it's pretty simple. It's, if you know, Yaoi is boy romance, Yuri is girl romance. Makes sense. So, this is the second part of the series. The first part of it is, there are these two girls, they meet, and the biggest thing to a lot of the Yuri mangas that you read is, I have these weird feelings, but they're just friend feelings, right? Because she's a girl, and I can't feel that way. So, for me, it's one of those things of, when I was younger, that's a lot of what I struggled with, is, she's a girl, you can't feel that way, that's not right, that's not correct, that's not what you're supposed to do. And of course I grew up in that time frame of, that's not what you're supposed to do. So it's, my biggest thing is too, is I don't like things that are over sexualized because it's just not, it's not my thing. And this one isn't over sexualized. It is for a more mature audience. I'm not saying if you're 12 you need to go read this, but if you're like 16, 17, go for it. Smaller children, no.
Interesting. So it's your favorite because of those themes of, like,
yeah,
girl friends, and then also because of, like, thing is they, stuff.
Yeah, that's it. The thing is what it comes down to is they end up being friends, like really, really close friends, and the both of them can't understand that it's more than a friendship, and neither of them realizes it. And I actually dealt with this when I was younger. Because I had a friend, and we were both growing up, and we were both gay, and we didn't understand it.
Interesting.
And so with these two, it's they're both in a world where they can't do this because it's not normal. It's not normal. It's not right. So it's a lot of back and forth with that, and that's where they come into issues. And it seems silly, but it's just, it's not over sexualized. It's very romantic. They do very interesting. It's really cute. And for me, it was just a really good series, just in that fact of it brought me back to that point when I was like 13, 14, and I didn't understand what was going on with me. And it made me feel okay, because that is normal. That does happen to everybody, so. Yeah. Read the first one first, because if you just pick up the second one, it doesn't make sense. We'll start with that, but the second one is my favorite, because then you actually see them get where they need to be.
Interesting. Well, with that said, what do you got for us?
I have something a lot less emotional and heartfelt. I've got Bone. The one volume edition, the way Bone should be read.
Yeah.
Black and white.
Nobody upset Nat today, man. You're going to get hit.
Yeah. This is the perfect example for me of why you shouldn't judge a book by its cover. I have a story, 7th grade, my buddy was talking to me about his comic books that he liked, and he was drawing pictures of a phone bone.
Because he's adorable!
Well, and I thought myself above that, being a superhero comic reader, and, you know, I was reading Spawn because I was cool.
And, we're also cool here.
When I was in art school, I discovered and read this for the first time. And my life was changed forever. I was changed as an artist. I was understanding the brushstroke, understanding the broad strokes of storytelling, and how you can use elements as an entry point for a bigger world. And I think that for me, I'm actually, like, after you're talking, I'm getting emotional thinking about, like, what the book means to me now. And it's just like...
Yeah, it's kind of sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's...
Well, it's not going to get any less emotional.
Yeah. it's cartoons fair. In the best form. It's like, I know I'm getting pretty teary-eyed actually just thinking about, like, It's Lord of the Rings meets Donald Duck. Meets, you know, like, it's,
so why don't you give us? I know it's like the biggest book ever. It makes the Walking Dead compendium look like a one issue,
right?
But why don't you give us a quick
so
synopsis?
The Bone Cousins, who literally are like cartoon characters, arrive in the valley.
They look like bones.
They look like little like bulbous bone things. But they arrive in the valley sort of by accident and just want
They're
to try to go back home.
Noses with feet.
Yeah, they were kind of ostracized in their city because of what one of them did, and then during his mayoral campaign, and they fall into a world that turns out to be full of magic and history, and have to be heroes in their own way.
Dragons.
Lots of dragons.
And like I said, it's basically this is Uncle Scrooge and the oh my god, I can't the cousins,
the duckling,
the nephews. Huey, Dewey, and Louie, and they fall into the Lord of the Rings. I mean, that's the best way I can describe it, and it's just so magical, and there's
and
so much.
It's basically, like, a classic Greek, like, it's like the Iliad and the Odyssey combined into, like, a Lord of the Rings-esque fantasy tale.
And then these beautiful...
With the Moby Dick thrown in on
Oh, yes.
With Moby Dick.
Jeff Smith. I'm sorry. I can't believe I let that out. Jeff Smith, the sole creator. Jeff Smith and...
Totally forgot my author, too. Fine.
His wife, Viasia, who quit her job and helped him publish this and get all of the pieces together. This is what is representative of an absolute labor of love. This is when somebody says, oh, I don't know what I should read, and they've already started dipping into comics and say, you need Bone. Bone needs to be in your collection, and my hand hurts from holding it up that high. So, yeah.
Hurrah!
Bone. Bone. Yeah, what do you got for us next, Kim?
I'm continuing in my vein of like critical acclaim. I got Mouse.
Ooh.
Because Mouse was another one that changed how I read comics and what I could expect from comics. Mouse, you know, I talk about how we've talked about this with Watchmen, right? How the art looks very dated.
Mm-hmm.
Mouse does not. Because it is, you know, it's past. It's oh hello, look, concentration camps.
Dive into the deep.
Yeah.
Yes, that was not my intention. But I mean, it still looks very clean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the style is it is so much more than a comic book. And this is, you know, when people say to me things like you know, I don't read comics. They're just comics. This is right. This is a book that
it's
you
like
can
a trigger word, yes, a trigger statement.
You can say, "Hey, look, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning."
Yeah,
you know,
mm-hmm.
and
I guess
this,
a lot of this at this point is just letting people know comics are literature.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
This will wreck you. Like if you have not read it and you go through
for the uninitiated, what is Mouse about?
Yeah.
It is about the Holocaust. It is.
That's why it will wreck you
completely.
It
takes place like in concentration camps.
I think one of the most interesting parts about this story is it is both a memoir and a biography.
Yes.
At the same time.
Yes.
Ugh.
And there
that
are
idea is rough.
Mm-hmm.
There are things in here.
I feel
like that
we're destroying ourselves slowly right now.
that you would
moved.
I mean there's a lot of comics even that you can read that you would go, you know what? That could have been done as prose, you know.
Right.
This could be adapted into prose and it would still be good. There are things in here which he conveyed through comics which could not have been conveyed through prose.
I recently reread it. I actually just finished it like 2 days ago.
This is by Art Spiegelman, by the way.
Art Spiegelman. Yes, and there's one scene in it where it's talking about the gas chambers and how they use basically like insect like pesticide in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then like at the end of that chapter there's like flies flying around and he's spraying insects with insect killer.
Yes.
And he's like, I don't know how anybody can do that stuff. And
yeah.
Then yeah, just so good.
Yeah, there are It's amazing. Yes, it's amazing.
Yes, Art Spiegelman is, the premise is Art Spiegelman is interviewing his father, who is a Holocaust survivor, if we didn't say that already.
Yeah, and there's so many, like, I mean, there, you can see the generational tension in there and how there's things that, that, you know, even having lived through the Holocaust and having, you know, having these experiences, you know, there's ways that he thinks that, you know, the son looks on and goes, ooh, that's not right.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's so well done.
Yes, for reading.
Yay. All right. Patrick, sending us home.
Sending us home with, I'm going to keep ramping up the emotion on this. So my number one, I don't actually have an issue or a copy of it with me right here, is American Born Chinese by Jean Luen Yang.
Oh,
he
God,
does
no.
the author. He's the author illustrator. So this is such a short read. I read it in 2 hours, and I'm a super slow reader. It is three parallel stories. Well, not parallel at all, actually. It doesn't become clear until the end why they're even together in the same book. So it starts off with Sun Wukong, I can't read my own writing, actually, who is the Monkey King from The Journey of the East, basically.
Oh, okay.
And his story about... Journey to the West, excuse me. And it's his story about how he tries to basically better himself and become a god and gets crushed by his attempts literally under a giant pile of rocks at the end.
That's awkward.
Yeah, and the next story is a second-generation Chinese immigrant, Jin Wang... Jean Luen Yang may or may not have inspired this character.
Semi-autopilot.
He comes to an elementary school and tries to fit in, basically tries to be an American boy, like date a white girl, and there's only one other, like, Chinese kid in his class who's like from China himself, like speaks in an accent and does all this stuff, and the Chinese kid keeps trying to get Jin to like be his friend, but he's like kind of trying to push that off, like trying to not accept his culture basically to fit in with the new culture in America. And the last story is I forget the sort of American's name, but it's this white American, his cousin Chin Ki, little wordplay right there, moves in a super stereotypical, like, sitcom sort of, like a Crocodile Dundee kind of, what am I trying to say? Like a fish out of water.
Okay,
sitcom,
yeah.
Basically.
What?
I know, right?
Was it we hit Australia?
I was like, where are we going with this?
But there's jokes about Chinese stereotypes, like the way he dresses. He, like, moves in and all of his luggage is in, like, takeout boxes, like, giant takeout boxes. And some of it is, like, in the beginning of that, story arc, it's like generally funny. Like some of it is actually like just so ridiculous that it's funny. And there's actually like a laugh track going across the bottom of it too. As that particular story progresses, the laughing is not funny. The laughing makes your heart hurt. It is laughing at them, not laughing with them. And it is crazy. So in the end, it turns out that, Danny, the white kid, that's his name, the white kid who is Chin Ki's cousin, is actually Jin Wang, who completely threw off his Chinese nature and actually became a white person. And it turns out that Chin Ki is actually the Monkey King, here to remind Danny, aka Jin, about his, like, actual, like, Chinese nature, like his, culture and heritage. Yes, thank you. I forgot those words for a second right there. And this book was so moving to me. One of my best friends in high school is Japanese. Jacob, if you're listening, I love you so much. And I was frankly a dick to him when I first met, like in middle school. And I read this and I knew, and I thought about this. I knew what I did, like, was very wrong. And like, I read this, like, and I was able to actually, like, put it, like, what I did into specific, like, thoughts. And I called him and I cried to him for, like, probably, like, 30 minutes. And he was just like, Yeah, okay.
Patrick's like, I've got to have a moment.
I'm such a bad person. I'm such a dick. Like, how could you ever, like, have been my friend after what I did to you? And he's just like,
it's awesome.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you, too. We haven't talked to him. Like, oh, God. I love you so much, Jacob. So this is such a powerful book. Such a powerful book in such a short amount of time. Just amazing. Jean Yang killing it in the comics game. Absolutely killing it. So
well,
on that emotional high note,
right? No. Let's say thank you to Kim for being here.
Thank you, Kim.
We appreciate you.
And hopefully that was apparently insightful.
you have to stop a part of us that we all attempt to hide sometimes. Yeah. Apparently.
So that's our trade picks.
Comics are great.
Let us know if you read any of them and what you think. I'm just saying, I wouldn't be offended.
Are we totally off base?
You're allowed to call me out.
Yeah.
Not allowed to call me out. I'll never.
You can find Kim to call her out at Griffin Games and Comics.
You can go directly to her.
Anyway,
I'll read your comments.
With that being said, why don't we say bye?
Bye.
Bye. Bye.